WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Museum of Modern Art in New York is about to begin a retrospective of the films produced by 20th Century Fox. My guest, Celeste Holm, starred in five of the films they'll screen, including All About Eve. This cynical comedy, set in the New York theater world, starred Bette Davis as an aging, celebrated actress. Celeste Holm co-starred as her friend Karen Richards. This is how Karen Richards was introduced in the opening scene.
This is Karen Richards. She is the wife of a playwright, therefore of the theater by marriage. Nothing in her background or breeding should have brought her any closer to the stage than row E, center. However, during her senior year at Radcliffe, Lloyd Richards lectured on the drama. The following year, Karen became Mrs. Lloyd Richards.
Unlike Karen Richards, Celeste Holm's early career got her a lot closer to the stage than row E. Before she went to Hollywood, she starred as Ado Annie in the original Broadway production of Oklahoma. And she starred in Harold Arlen's musical, Bloomer Girl. For 20th Century Fox, she made The Snake Pit, Come to the Stable, Gentleman's Agreement, Letter to Three Wives, and All About Eve. At MGM, she made High Society. After the movie studio era, she guest starred on many TV shows and most recently appeared in the film Three Men and a Baby. We invited Celeste Holm to talk about her days under contract to 20th Century Fox. Daryl Zanuck was the head of the studio when Celeste Holm was signed. I asked her what he was like.
Well, he was short, and so he wanted to be tall, and he made very good pictures because of that. But a lot of good things have been done for the wrong reasons. But he asked me to come and see him. And he said, I met him at a party. He said, why haven't you come in to see me? I said, because you didn't ask. I said, I don't go where I'm not asked. So I came in to see him. Now, every day of the studio, they had asked me to come in at 6:30. This is making a picture called Three Little Girls in Blue. I was the one in red. And they said, come at 6:30, and so I sat there from 6:30 to 5:30, 7:30, something like that, and never worked. I found out later that was called breaking the New York actress's spirit. Now, what a dumb thing to do. What they're buying is the New York actress's spirit. You get somebody that's limp or angry, what do you got? Nothing.
When you were signed, like, what's the first thing that happens? Do they send you to publicity right away so that,
yes,
that they could get a press release
they
out
sent
on
me
you?
To publicity. I met an absolute idiot, and he asked me what I had done and where I came from and all that. So I told him. And I told him we had a farm in New Jersey and that my father had built a theater on it for us, a stage. So he wrote that Celeste Holm's father had a theater built on their estate. My Lord, it was nothing like that at all. You know, they didn't understand at all. You tell them a fact, and they blew it up into whatever they thought was suitable. So they gave an impression which was totally false.
Were there facts from those old bios that followed you throughout your life?
Yeah, but not correct.
That's what I mean.
In other words, I went to school in Paris because my mother was a portrait painter, and she was having an exhibit in Paris, and so she wanted to know if I wanted to go with her. Of course I wanted to go with her. And that's how I went to school in France. But it wasn't, you know, some elaborate, rich, self-conscious behavior, you know?
And did they have an image for you when you arrived that you were supposed to fit yourself into?
Nuh-uh. They better not. No. Because then, you see, I made one more musical called Carnival in Costa Rica. I'm glad they're not showing that. It had a wonderful score, but it was a very silly picture. And so from then on, I decided I would never be talked into a picture. So then Moss Hart asked me to be in Gentleman's Agreement, and I read the script, and I said, yes, of course, immediately, any part. So that's how I got that.
Well, let me back up. When you were signed to 20th Century Fox, how was it decided which movies you'd be in? Would you have to audition for a film? Did they
just assign you
to a film?
No. They just said, this is your next picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd read it. You'd say, oh, this is so silly. And they'd say, yeah, well, yes, but this is what we want you to do. So the first picture, they talked me into it. They said, oh, it'll be wonderful. You'll be fine. And I was. I got very good notices. You know, Time said I was a wow and all that sort of thing. So then they were very anxious to put me in another thing. They'd put me in Carnival in Costa Rica, which was silly. Dumb. They never took us to Costa Rica. We hadn't any idea what Costa Rica was like. They did the whole thing in front of process shots with trees with coffee beans on them. So we had no sense of reality about any of it. Oh. But then came Gentleman's Agreement. I was rescued. And then, of course, I could never get back into a musical.
So was there an understanding that if you objected strenuously to a movie that you were assigned to, that you'd be punished?
Oh, sure. I went on suspension. I was on suspension a lot.
Oh, really? Like for what?
Oh, yes.
What would they put you on suspension for?
For turning down a picture.
And what would that mean when you were on suspension?
You didn't get paid. Mm. And when Gentleman's Agreement came along, they wouldn't let me have that picture unless I agreed to. See, I made the mistake of making it very clear I was dying to do it. So then they made me sign a term contract.
Let me ask you about one of the most celebrated movies that you've been in, and that's All About Eve.
Mm-hmm. I was no longer under contract when I did that.
And how did you do it without being under contract?
Mr. Mankiewicz insisted. Joe Mankiewicz wrote the script and produced it and directed it, and he wanted me.
How come you weren't under contract then?
Because the year before, they had a cutback, financial cutback, and my lawyer got a wire from Zanuck saying, would our dear Celeste, we have two more pictures in the can, they haven't been released yet, and we're very anxious for her to stay with us, of course, but would she object to not taking her $500 raise now, but take a $1,000 raise the next one, which would be a year later instead of 6 months, you see. No, it would be 6 months later. That's right. And so my lawyer called me and said, you want to get out? I said, oh, God, do I want to get out? So he wrote a letter saying, Miss Holm has fulfilled the terms of her contract. Why can't you? And Mr. Zanuck got very angry. And I was out.
But you wanted to be out?
Sure.
So you had
then he called all the other studios and said I was difficult.
Oh, further punishment.
And the next studio that hired me was his.
Oh, for All About Eve?
Yes.
Okay. Did you realize by looking at the script what a terrific movie
you
this was going to be?
Sure. Oh, I knew that would be a wonderful picture.
I'd like to play a short clip from a scene in All About Eve. This is the kind of culmination of the scene that starts with Bette Davis saying, fasten your seatbelt, it's going to be a bumpy night. Mm-hmm. So the party is coming to a close. Bette Davis is really drunk.
Very
and getting,
drunk.
Getting very bitter because she could tell Eve is really out to get her roles and out to get her man.
No. She doesn't know Eve is out to get her roles yet. She doesn't know. She wasn't understudy yet. She was just secretary. But she knew that she felt threatened in relation to her man.
So the party
at that point.
The party is wrapping up. People are kind of getting ready to go home. Bette Davis is really drunk, and here's the scene.
How about calling it a night?
And you pose as a playwright, a situation pregnant with possibilities, and all you can think of is everybody go to sleep.
It's a good thought.
It won't play. As a non-professional, I think it's an excellent idea. Excuse me. Undramatic, perhaps, but practical. Happy little housewife.
Cut it out.
This is my house, not a theater. In my house, you're a guest, not a director.
And stop being a star. And stop treating your guests as your supporting cast.
Now, let's not get into a big hassle.
It's about time we did. It's about time Margot realized that what's attractive on stage need not necessarily be attractive off.
All right. I'm going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any conversations with Bette Davis like that off the set?
No. We had no conversations at all.
You weren't even on speaking terms?
I had nothing to say to her.
Why not? What was she like to work with?
Excellent. She was fine to work with. But there was no small talk.
You mean she allowed no small talk?
Well, she had nothing to say to anybody, and so consequently nobody had anything to say to her.
Let me quote something that she said in... This is in the 1970s when she got an AFI, an American Film Institute Lifetime Achievement Award. And at the
I was there.
Okay, at the party after the banquet, she said, Joseph Mankiewicz did give me a second career, but he was slightly in error describing the wonderful cast of Eve. They were wonderful, but there was one bitch, Celeste Holm.
Did she really?
Well,
oh, that's funny. Well, she was the only bitch I've ever worked with.
Why do you think she said that about you?
Because I had no patience with her. First day I walked onto the set, I said, good morning. And she said, oh, shit, good manners. So I thought, well, this is a waste of time. So I had nothing to say to her. And then I'm delighted that she said that. Oh, good. So at one point she suddenly lost her temper, and her mother was visiting the set, and she had never talked this way before. She did this in front of her mother. She used four-letter words in combination I've never even heard a sailor use. And I said, I'm going back to my trailer, and when Miss Davis gets herself together, call me. And then when we were playing in 21, we were all sitting there together. And so I came back from having talked to Eve in the ladies' room.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne and I were very good friends. I mean, I loved everybody in the cast, except Betty, because she wouldn't let you love her. So we were all sitting there, and I said, did you know that the man who made the wonderful glass teapot, Pyrex, when he found out they were using it to make martinis, he stopped making them. And Betty drank more than she should, I thought. And so she looked at me and she said, I don't know how I've lived this long without knowing that. So I don't know who was the bitch.
Did this kind of tension between you two get translated into your acting? Into the scenes that you played together?
I don't think it did. I thought we were both very good together. Everybody said, you must be really very good friends. I said, no, not really.
Celeste Holm is my guest. And we're talking about some of the movies that she made.
By the way, I have never had any difficulty with any other actress in any other show, ever.
Well, Marilyn Monroe had one of her first roles in All About Eve. And
I got to be a very good friend of hers.
What were your first impressions of her when she came onto the set?
I thought she was a sweet, dumb little girl.
Was that your impression after you'd worked with her more?
Yes, because she wasn't terribly good in that. She got awfully good after she worked at the Actor's Studio and so forth. I thought she was absolutely marvelous in Bus Stop. Marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Now, you worked with Joseph Mankiewicz. You know, he wrote, directed All About Eve. You'd worked in other films as well.
Letter to Three Wives.
Yeah. What kind of director?
Wonderful man.
Tell me what his directing was like, especially when he was directing his own lines, and his writing was so good. There's so much clever dialogue.
Very bright, yes. Well, it was more than dialogue. It was that the characters of the people were interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They were individuals. And that's what good writing is about. And nobody seems to know that now. Most writing is just somehow get it onto paper, and if all the lights are left on, well, let's print it. It's very sad. It's not good enough.
So what was his way of directing you? Did he have...
No, he didn't have any particularly good... We just saw to it that we didn't bump into each other or the furniture. Most of us were pretty good actors, you know, so he left us pretty much alone.
Uh-huh. You were directed by Ilya Kazan in Gentleman's Agreement.
Yes, indeed.
What was he like as a director?
He's a very interesting director. He's a secretive director. For instance, if he has a piece of direction for you, he'll whisper it in your ear so the other actors don't hear what it is. Then he whispers in their ears. And then you do the scene again, and you try to figure out what he said to them by what they do. And they try to figure out what he said to you. It's very interesting and very truthful because all good actors have secrets. All interesting people have secrets, which is why you want to get to know them better.
What's one of the secrets he whispered in your ear?
You cannot stand that girl. I want to see it very quickly and then cover it.
And why wouldn't he have wanted the actress that you were playing opposite again to know that?
Uh-huh.
Why not?
Well, because your relationship to somebody is your own relationship. He did not want it to be an inimical one. He did not want a confrontational thing at all. He just wanted that subtle business where one woman looks at another and doesn't much like her, you know?
Can you remember any of the other advice he gave you?
No. I just remember that one in particular. Because, you see, usually directors direct out in the open so that everybody hears everything.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I think, is far more interesting. And it means we keep our secrets. So often in when a movie is being directed or a play, a director will say something to an actor. An actor will go into a long screed about why he doesn't want to do that and tells much more about himself than you want to hear.
You know, we had been talking before about how you ended up getting out of your contract with 20th Century Fox. Why did you want to get out of it?
Because I wasn't, you see, having had quite a bit of experience before I came to pictures, I knew what I could do best. And I thought it was better that I do things that I do better than to do things that in which I was not particularly, I didn't feel particularly distinguished. I mean, that's what a star is. A star has a quality which you protect. Well, Zanna didn't know what the hell that was. He'd never even seen me. He got a clue on A Gentleman's Agreement, but how many scripts do you get like Moss Hart's writing? So then, of course, it came out again with Mr. Mankiewicz. So it was not a, it was a story studio. Fox was a story studio. They had a lot of interesting pictures. Not as much character studio. In other words, they were not as interested in the character of the people as they were in the stories.
What was the reputation of the different studios among actors?
Well, I found out later, I probably would have done a great deal better at Metro. I always loved working at Metro. High Society we did at Metro. Mm-hmm. Tender Trap I did at Metro.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both delicious pictures, delightful. And a much more human studio. I don't think Zanuck liked actors. I know he didn't like women. He liked girls. He would. They would say, yes, whatever you say. But if you, you know, you say, wait a minute, I'm not sure that's going to work. Well, he didn't want to hear that.
So in what way was MGM more human? I mean, you said you really liked them.
Well, it was just more fun.
Uh-huh.
They seemed to realize that humor and... I've always had a sense of responsibility about keeping a set alive and happy because that's what photographs. You know, we're the only industry outside of musicians whose work is referred to as playing. And it has to be playing. We have to really play together. And that's what the audience responds to. If it's work, it's not you don't want to watch. And that kind of pleasure, that kind of balloon, that kind of bubble in the air is what makes all good comedy. And it's what the audience really enjoys.
Since we brought up High Society, let me ask you about making that movie. And as you pointed out, it's an MGM movie made in 1956. Now, you played opposite Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby. In this. What was it like to work with Sinatra? You also worked with him in The Tender Trap.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always gotten along well with children. And Frank's charm is that he's like a child. He wants everything his way and he wants it now. And he sings beautifully. And as long as all of those things are functioning, well, he's just a pleasure.
And if they're not?
Hmm?
And if they're not functioning?
Well, then he sometimes walks off the set.
Did that happen a lot during High Society?
No. No. It happened once in Tender Trap.
What did he walk out over?
Astonished us all. Just astonished us. Couldn't believe it. You know, just suddenly saying, well, I don't want to shoot any more today. Of course, he was also delicious in it. He was absolutely wonderful in it.
Were you sorry when the film studios broke up?
Yes, I was very dismayed and disheartened by that because, you see, the most important thing about freedom is responsibility. If you don't have a sense of responsibility about what you do, it's not very good as a rule. And the studios had all those theaters to fill, so they had a sense of responsibility to those theaters. And the minute those theaters were gone, they didn't have that. And pictures were not as good after that. Then they no longer had all those people under talent, under contract, which they had to protect.
How did it change?
The industry was really very changed by that.
How did it change your career when the studio system ended?
I went right to New York and did a play. It didn't matter to me.
How often do you go to the movies now?
Oh, at least once a week.
And
of course, during Oscar time, when I have to vote, I have to, oh, God, sometimes I see 6 movies a week to catch up. But that's why I see so many during the year, so I don't have to do it all at one in one clump.
And what are your impressions of how movies have changed?
Oh, I think they've improved in some ways, and I think the writing has not. I think the technical aspects have improved, but I think the concepts are dumb for the most part.
Are you going to the 20th Century Fox retrospective at the Museum of Modern Art?
Absolutely. Sure, when I get back. And fortunately, they have showing each picture at least twice, so I hope to be able to see the ones that I want to see. Although there's some in there, I don't know why they bothered. Uh-huh.
Celeste Holm, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
The Museum of Modern Art in New York presents its retrospective of the classic years of the 20th Century Fox Studio from July 1st to September 11th. Celeste Holm is featured in 5 of the films, including All About Eve and Gentleman's Agreement. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.